Drake awoke as the eye closed. It was all clear in an instant, without the labor he had spent working over the Dutchman's words. Maldonado stood by the bedside, his face Karloff's, and said,
"We deserve to be dead."
Yes, that was what it was like when you discovered you were a robot, not a man, like Karloff in the last scene of Bride of Frankenstein. Drake awoke again, and this time he was really awake. It was clear, crystal clear, and he had no regrets. Far away over Long Island Sound came the first distant rumble of thunder, and he knew this was no storm that any scientist, less heretical than Jung or Wilhelm Reich, would ever understand. "Our job," Huxley wrote before death, "is waking up." Drake put on his robe quickly and stepped out into the dark Elizabethan hallway. $500,000 this house and grounds had cost, including the cottages, and it was only one of his 8 estates. Money. What did it mean when Narlet Hotep appeared and the wild beasts followed him and licked his hands, as that damn stupid smart Lovecraft wrote? What did it matter when the blind idiot god Chaos blew Earth's dust away? Drake pushed open the dark paneled doorway of George's room. Good. Tarantella was gone. The thunder rumbled again, and Drake's own shadow looming over the bed reminded him once more of a Karloff movie. He bent over the bed and shook George's shoulder gently.
"Mavis,"
the boy said. Drake wondered who the hell Mavis was. Somebody terrific, obviously, if George could be dreaming about her after a session with the Illuminati-trained Tarantella. Or was Mavis another ex-Illuminatus? There were a lot of them with the Discordians lately, Drake had surmised. He shook George's shoulder again more vigorously.
"Oh, no, I can't come again," George said.
Drake gave another shake, and 2 weary and frightened eyes opened to look at him.
"What? Up?"
Drake grunted, grabbing George under the arms and pulling him to a sitting position.
"Out of bed,"
he added, panting, rolling the boy to the edge. Drake was looking through waves upward at George.
"Damn it, the thing has already found my mind. You've got to get out,"
he repeated.
"You're in danger here."
October 23rd, 1935. Charlie Workman, Mendy Weiss, and Jimmy the Shrew charged through the door of the palace chop house and, according to orders, cowboy the joint. Lead pellets like rain and rain like lead pellets hitting George's window.
"Christ, what is it?"
he asked. Drake stood him up stark naked and handed him his drawers, repeating,
"Hurry!"
Charlie the Bug looked over the 3 bodies. Abba Dabba Berman, Lulu Rosencrantz, and somebody he didn't recognize. None of them was the Dutchman.
"My God, we fucked up," he said.
"Dutch ain't here."
But a commotion has started in the alleys of the dream. Albert Stern, taking his last fix of the night, suddenly recalls his fantasy of killing somebody as important as John Dillinger.
"The can,"
Mendy Weiss says excitedly. He had a hard-on, like he always did on this kind of job.
"Man is a giant,"
Drake says.
"Forced to live in a pygmy's hut."
"What does that mean?"
George asks.
"It means we're all fools,"
Drake says excitedly, smelling the old whore death.
"Especially those of us who try to act like giants by bullying the others in the hut instead of knocking the goddamn walls down. Carl Jung told me that, only in more elegant language."
George's dangling penis kept catching his eye. Homosexuality, an occasional thing with Drake, heterosexuality, his normal state, and the new lust for the old whore death were all tugging at him. The Dutchman dropped his penis, urine squirting his shoes, and went for his gun as he heard the shots in the barroom. He turned quickly, unable to stop pissing, and Albert Stern came through the door, shooting before Dutch could take aim. Falling forward, he saw that it was really Vince Cole, a ghost.
"Oh, mama, mama, mama,"
he said, lying in his urine.
Which way do we go?"
George asked, buttoning his shirt.
"You go,"
Drake said.
"Down the stairs and out the back to the garage. Here's the key to my Silverwraith Rolls Royce. It won't be of any use to me anymore."
"Why aren't you coming?"
George protested.
"We deserve to be dead,"
Drake said.
"All of us in this house."
"Hey, that's crazy. I don't care what you've done. A guilt trip is always crazy.
I've been on a crazier trip, as you'd call it, all my life.
Drake said calmly.
The power trip. Now move!
George, don't make no bull moves!
The Dutchman said.
He's talking.
Sergeant Luke Conlon whispered at the foot of the hospital bed. The police stenographer, F.J. Long, began taking notes.
What have you done with him?
The Dutchman went on.
Oh, Mama, Mama, Mama!
Oh, stop it!
Oh, sure, Mama.
Drake sat down at the window seat and, too nervous for a cigar, lit one of his infrequent cigarettes.
157,
he thought, remembering the last entry in his little notebook.
157 rich women, one wife, and 17 boys. And never once did I really make contact. Never once did I smash the walls.
The wind and the rain were now deafening outside.
$14 billion, $13 billion illegal and tax-free. More than Getty or Hunt, even if I could never publicize the fact. And that Arab boy in Tangier who picked my pocket after he blew me? My mother's perfume. Hours and hours in Zurich, puzzling over the Dutchman's words.
Outside Flegenheimer's livery stable in the Bronx, Phil Silverberg is teasing young Arthur Flegenheimer in 1913, holding the burglar's tools out of reach, asking mockingly,
"Do you really think you're big enough to knock over a house on your own?"
In the Newark hospital, the Dutchman cries angrily,
"Now listen, Phil, fun is fun."
The 17 Illuminati representatives vanished in the dark. The one with the goat's head suddenly returned.
"What happened to the other 16?
Dutch asked the hospital walls. The blood from his arm signed the parchment.
"Oh, he done it. Please,"
he asked vaguely. Sergeant Conlon looks bemusedly at the stenographer Lang.
"The lightning seemed dark, and the darkness seemed light. It's taking hold of my mind completely,"
Drake thought, sitting by the window.
"I will hold on to my sanity. What was that rock song about Jesus I was remembering? Only 5 inches between me and happiness, was it? No, that's from Deep Throat. The whiteness of the whale."
The waves covered his vision again. Wrong song, obviously.
"I have to reach him, to unify the forces. No, damn it, that's not my thought. That's his thought. He's coming up, up, out of the waves. I must rise. I must rise to unify the forces."
Dillinger said,
"You're right, Dutch. Fuck the Illuminati. Fuck the Moth. The justified ancients of Mumu would be glad to have you."
The Dutchman looked right into Sergeant Conlon's eyes and asked,
"John, please, oh, did you buy the whole tale? You promised 1,000,000, sure. Get out. I wish I knew. Please, make it quick. Fast and furious, please. Fast and furious. Please help me get out."
"I should have gotten out in 42 when I first learned about the camps,"
Drake thought.
"I never realized until then that they really meant to do it. And next, Hiroshima. Why did I stay after Hiroshima? It was so obvious. It was just the way Lovecraft wrote. The idiot god Chaos blew Earth's dust away. And back in 35, I knew the secret. If a cheap hoodlum like Dutch Schultz had a great poet buried in him, what might be released if any man looked the old whore death in the eye? Say that I betrayed my country and my planet, but worse, and that I betrayed Robert Putney Drake, the giant of psychology I murdered when I used the secret of power, and not for healing. I see the plumbers, the cesspool cleaners, the colorless all-color of atheism. I am the fates, Lieutenant. I act under orders. White. White Void. Ahab's eye. 5 inches from happiness. The law of fives. Always. Ahab slurped down. Down.
This Bavarian stuff is all bullshit,
Dillinger said.
They're mostly Englishmen since Rhodes took command in 1888, and they've already infiltrated justice, state, and labor, as well as the treasury. That's who you're playing ball with. And let me tell you what they plan to do with your people, the Jews, in this war they're cooking up.
Listen,
the Dutchman interrupted.
Capone would have a bullet in me if he knew I was even talking to you, John.
Are you afraid of Capone? He arranged to have the feds put a bullet in me at the Biograph, and I'm still sassy and lively as ever.
I'm not afraid of Capone, or Lepke, or Maldonado, or...
The Dutchman's eyes brought back the hospital room.
I'm a pretty good pretzeler,
he told Sergeant Conlon anxiously.
Winifred, Department of Justice, I even got it from the department.
The pain shot through him, sharp as ecstasy.
Sir! Please stop it.
He had to explain about De Molay and Weishaupt.
Listen, the last night, I don't want to holler.
It was so hard with the pulsings of the pain.
I don't know, sir. Honestly, I don't. I went to the toilet. I was in the can, and the boy came at me. If he wanted to break the ring... Oh, no, please, I get a month... Come on, Illuminati, cut me off.
It was so hard to explain.
I had nothing with him, and he was a cowboy in one of the 7 days. Evig, fight. No business, no hangouts, no friends, nothing. Just what you pick up and what you need.
The pain wasn't just the bullet. They were working on his mind, trying to stop him from saying too much. He saw the goat head.
Let him harness himself to you and then bother you. They are Englishmen, and they are a type, and I don't know who is best, they or us.
So much to say, so little time. He thought of Francie, his wife.
Oh, sir, get the doll a rafting.
The Illuminati formula to summon the Loaigar, he could at least reveal that.
A boy has never wept, nor dashed 1,000, Kim. Did you hear me?
They had to understand how high it went all over the world.
I would hear it. The Circuit Court would hear it. And the Supreme Court would hear it. If that ain't the payoff. Please crack down on the Chinaman's friends and Hitler's commander.
Eris, the Great Mother, was the only alternative to the Illuminati's power. He had to tell them that much.
Mother is the best bet, and don't let Satan draw you too fast.
He's blabbing too much.
The one who wore the goat head, Winifred from Washington, said.
Increase the pain.
The dirty rats have tuned in!
Dutch shouted.
Control yourself.
Sergeant Conlon said soothingly.
But I'm dying,
Dutch explained. Couldn't they understand anything? Drake met Winifred at a cocktail party in Washington in 1947, just after the National Security Act was passed by the Senate.
Well,
Winifred asked,
do you have any further doubts?
None at all,
Drake said.
All my open money is now invested in defense industries.
Keep it there,
Winifred smiled.
And you'll get richer than you ever dreamed. Our present projection is that we can get Congress to approve $1 trillion in war preparations before 1967.
Drake thought fast and asked softly,
you're going to add another villain beside Russia?
Watch China,
Winifred said calmly. For once, curiosity surpassed cupidity in Drake. He asked,
are you really keeping him in the Pentagon?
Would you like to meet him face to face?
Winifred asked, with a faint hint of sneer in his voice.
No, thank you,
Drake said coolly.
I've been reading Hermann Rauschning. I remember Hitler's words about the Superman. He is alive, among us. I have met him. He is intrepid and terrible. I was afraid of him. That's enough for my curiosity.
Hitler,
Winifred replied, not hiding the sneer now,
saw him in his more human form. He's progressed since then.
Tonight,
Drake thought, as the thunder rose to a maddening crescendo,
I will see him, or one of them. Surely, I could have picked a more agreeable form of suicide. The question was pointless. Jung had been right all along with his law of opposites. Even Freud knew it. Every sadist becomes a masochist at last.
On an impulse, Drake arose and fetched a pad and pen from the bedside Tudor table. He began to scribble by the light of the increasing electrical storm outside.
What am I afraid of? Haven't I been building up to this rendezvous ever since I threw the bottle at Mother when I was 1.5 years old? And it is kin to me. We both live on blood, do we not? Even if I have prettied it over by taking the blood money instead of the blood itself. Dimensions keep shifting whenever it gets a fix on me. Prynne was right in his De Vermis Mysterious. They don't really participate in the same space-time as us. That's what Alhazred meant when he wrote, their hand is at your throat, but you see them not. They walk serene and unsuspected, not in the spaces we know, but between them.
Oh, pull me out,
the Dutchman moaned.
I am half crazy. They won't let me get up. They dyed my shoes. Give me something. I'm so sick.
I can see Kadath and the two magnetic poles. I must unify the forces by eating the entity. Which me is the real me? Is it so easy to flow into my soul because there is so little soul left? Is that what Jung was trying to tell me about power? I see Newark Hospital and the Dutchman. I see the white light and then the black that does not pulsate or move. I see George trying to drive the rolls in this damnable rain. I see the whiteness of whiteness is black.
Anybody,
the Dutchman pleaded,
kindly take my shoes off. No, there's a handcuff on them. The Baron says these things.
I see Weishaupt and the Iron Boot. No wonder only 5 ever withstand the ordeal to become the top of the pyramid. Baron Rothschild won't let Rhodes get away with that. What is time or space, anyway? What is soul that we claim to judge it? What is real? The boy, Arthur Fleggenheimer, seeking for his mother? The gangster, Dutch Schultz, dealing in murder and corruption with the cool of a Medici or a Morgan? Or the mad poet being born in the Newark Hospital bed as the others die? And Elizabeth was a bitch. They sang the golden vanity about Raleigh, but none could speak a word against me. Yet he received the preference. The Globe Theatre, new drama by Will Shakespeare. Down the street, they torture Saccharin the bear for sport. Christ! They opened the San Andreas Fault to hide the most important records about Norton. Sidewalks opening like mouths. John Barrymore falling out of bed. Will Shakespeare in his mind. My mind. Sir Francis's mind. Roderick Usher. Starry wisdom, they called it.
The sidewalk was in trouble,
the Dutchman tried to explain.
And the bears were in trouble, and I broke it up. Please, put me in that room. Please, keep him in control.
I can hear it. The very sounds recorded by Poe and Lovecraft. Tickle-lee, tickle-lee-lee. It must be close. I didn't mean to throw the bottle, Mother. I just wanted your attention. I just wanted attention.
Okay,
the Dutchman sighed.
Okay, I am all through. Can't do another thing. Look out, Mama. Look out for her. You can't beat him. Police! Mama! Helen! Mother! Please take me out!
I can see it, and it can see me in the dark. There are things worse than death. Vivisections of the spirit. I should run. Well, why do I sit here? The bicycle and the tricycle. 23 skidoo. Inside the pentagon. The cold of interstellar space. They came from the stars and brought their images with them. Mother, I'm sorry.
Come on, open the soap duckets,
the Dutchman said hopelessly.
The chimney sweeps, take to the sword.
It is like a chimney without end. Up and up forever, in deeper and deeper darkness, and the red, all-seeing eye.
Please, help me up. A French-Canadian bean soup. I want to pay. Let them leave me alone.
I want to join it. I want to become it. I have no more will of my own. I take thee, old or death, as my lawful wedded wife. I am mad. I am half mad. Mother, the bottle, Linda, slurped, sucked down. Unity.
A 9-year-old girl named Patty Cohen lived 3 miles down the coast from the Drake estate, and she went mad in those early morning hours of April 25th. At first, her parents thought she had gotten hold of some of the LSD, which was known to be infiltrating the local grammar school, and being fairly hip, they fed her niacin and horse doctor's doses of vitamin C as she ran about the house, alternately laughing and making faces at them, howling about, "He's lying in his own piss," and "He's still alive inside it," and "Roderick Usher." By morning, they knew it was more than acid, and months of sadness began as they took her to clinics and private psychiatrists, and more clinics and more private psychiatrists. Finally, just before Hanukkah in December, they took her to an elegant shrink on Park Avenue, and she had a virtual epileptic fit in the waiting room, staring at a statue on the end table and screaming, "Don't let him eat me! Don't let him eat me!" Her recovery began from that day, and the sight of that miniature representation of the giant Tlaloc in Mexico City.